Hello, it's only Sylv. Just a quick heads up before we get into it. We've recorded all these conversations remotely during lockdown, so there might be a few little glitches in the sound here and there. Anyway, I'll shut up now and let you crack on with listening to our chat. Hope you enjoy it, gang.
Welcome to the BIY Podcast, a podcast focused on demystifying the world of work in the music industry by sharing career stories from those who know. I'm Anne Frankenstein. I'm a DJ and broadcaster.
And I'm Sylvia Gargiulo, the founder of BIY People and Talent. We wanted to deliver honest, meaningful, compassionate human conversations with people for people through the lens of working in the music business and beyond.
We're delighted to have radio producer Shola Aleje with us today. Sylv, tell us a little bit about Shola, why you invited her on the show and how you guys know each other.
As you know, I wanted to talk to brilliant people I've met over the years to share their career stories and find out how they got to where they are today, delivering insight, advice and a sprinkling of inspiration for our listeners, whether they're just starting out or they're already on their career path within the music business. I first met Shola when she was working at the legendary Metropolis Studios sometime in the early 2010s, I think. Her warmth and absolute passion for music was just so contagious and genuinely really inspiring. She'd worked at Sony Music. She'd been a radio presenter. Fast forward to now, Shola is a podcast and radio producer working freelance at, amongst other places, the BBC. She has produced more podcasts than I've got time to name check right now. So I'm utterly thrilled and so, so grateful that she's agreed to have a chat with us today. Welcome to the BIY Pod, Shola.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for that intro.
Was very This Is Your Life, wasn't it? I love it.
It's such a pleasure to be speaking to you, Shola, and we're going to get into your career story very shortly. But first, continuing with that theme, This Is Your Life, I've got some quick fire questions for you so we can get to know you a little bit better. Fingers on buzzers or whatever the phrase is. What's the first album you bought? Think fast.
Oh, Roxy Music's Greatest Hits.
What's the first gig you went to?
Red Hot Chili Peppers, being supported by James Brown. Yeah, I can't remember when it was like 19, I think.
Life-changing.
I know, got that. It was the first time I ever used eBay. I spent £55 on the ticket, which is a lot of money for now even. But back then when I was 19, it was like the most money ever that I'd spend on anything. But yeah, it's my first gig.
I mean, if anything, it's worth it because it's given you like the perfect answer to that question, which is so embarrassing for most people. What's the first gig you went to? Then you can answer with that.
June 19th, I think it was like, I can't remember the year, but I just remember the date for some reason. Great, it was an amazing gig.
So if you can remember life before lockdown, what was the last show you went to?
It was at Six Music Festival, actually, where I worked. It was literally in March. And there was a whole thing of if that festival was happening a week later, it probably would have been cancelled. It was Roisin Murphy, actually. It was the last gig.
What have you got on repeat at the moment?
At the moment, I'm playing a lot of Terry Hall, actually, and Michael Kiwanuka.
That's an incredible album. That is definitely on repeat.
It's great. It's such a beautiful, beautiful soul record. And a Surprise Chef, who's kind of a new jazzy outfit, but they've brought a new album out. And David Bowie, it's always, oh, like, always David Bowie.
Shola, I'm really excited to hear you answer this next question because you just have the best music taste of anyone I've ever spoken to. What is your dream lineup, past or present? If you could create a lineup for your own band, what would it be?
Oh my God, wow, that is a huge question, which I love. Actually, okay, so I'd love to see Karen O and Danger Mouse's project, the album that they released, just been constant repeat, and I'd have loved to have seen that live. So that would definitely be on there. I'd say Jose Feliciano just doing, you know, kind of opening up, doing some acoustic, you know, covers. Bobby Womack warming up for Gorillaz, playing. It has to be Gorillaz, kind of in their Plastic Beach era. Then probably, I'd say, Tom York doing a mixture of his own solo stuff. And then how long? How long have we got? Like, is this like a two-day festival?
You can have a two-day festival if you want.
This is so fun. And then I'll get Richard Russell, I think, doing Everything Is Recorded, like the first album, with all the guests, like Sampha and Andrew Weatherall will be DJing in between. In between all the acts. But who are the headliner be? It'll probably have to be Roxy Music, because they're the band that probably mean the most to me, I think. I mean, look, I haven't even included any of the Oasis, the Blurs or anything, so I'm just going to stop this right now.
We will literally spend the entirety of the podcast talking about your dream lineup, but seriously, I want to go to that festival.
So before we get stuck into your career story, when you kindly agreed to be on the show, I sent you a list of words to pick from, your peas in the pod, if you will, and you picked positivity, purpose, and people. So what was it about those three P's that made you pick them?
So positivity is like a big thing for me, and it's something that, not to sound like a hippie, but it's something that I have to like actively practice, I think. Being in the job that I'm in, it's quite high pressured and there's a lot of things that can naturally make you feel pessimistic. For me, in all areas of my life, I think remaining positive is something that makes me feel like a better person and a happier person. And it's just, I listened to a podcast actually by Michael Smiley recently, and he was talking about positivity as well. And he just completely nailed it when it says you just kind of have to make a decision to be a positive person and practice it. I try and remember that, especially when I'm in like ultra like stressful periods in my life. So that's like kind of the main thing. That's why that's the top one for me.
It is so important, isn't it? Because it takes a lot of work. I think I struggle with that. I'm like, okay, how do I respond to this? Yeah, be mindful. Yeah,
especially,
absolutely.
You know, with what's happening in the world this year, which has just kind of been just so insane. And there are moments where you're just like, oh God, what's the point? Especially, you know, the way we're moving in tears and just how everything's just changing week by week. And there's a lot to not feel positive about. And yeah, so you literally just, it's like a mantra. It's something that you just kind of have to practice really.
Yeah. And it's like, you're right. It's like a relentless wave of obstacles being put in your path. And it's like, okay, try and be positive.
I can
deep
do this.
Breath. Yeah, exactly.
I'm doing like the mantra mode now with my hands. Like,
me too. That's exactly what I'm doing. Exactly what I'm doing. Well, that's amazing. So positivity is key. Your next P was purpose. So talk us through that one, Shola.
Well, I guess with purpose, it's just kind of reminding yourself, for me, it's like, why do I do what I do? And I'm not going to constantly refer to this year, but I kind of have to in many ways because it's been so extraordinary. And I think, especially my job, radio has never been more important. And my role as a producer, it's like, how do we bring purpose to people's lives through our medium, through the music we play, through the stories that we tell? It's never been more important now. The messages that we've had through in this last year about how much, you know, having Lauren on air is just kind of giving them purpose, especially for a lot of people that live alone. I'm very lucky. I live with my wonderful partner and, you know, we've managed to get through this period together. But a lot of people don't have those kind of opportunities. And it's like actually people have been leaning on things like TV, radio, films, and to kind of get them through it. And I think that's why it's really quite frustrating at the moment, the way the arts have kind of been treated, because the arts have provided a huge lifeline for so many people. So I feel like in my job, it's like, how do I continue that? That's why I think purpose is so important, really.
Yeah, agreed on so many levels with that as well. And I think that I live on my own and I found it very isolating on so many different levels. And just having mm-hmm. those radio shows and podcasts to listen to where you feel like you're actually interacting with people, despite the fact you're not, it's sort of like you've got some friends there to that makes me sound really sad.
We no, might cut not that at bit. All. Because you know, when I was growing up, radio was such a huge part of my life. It was, you know, it was my aid. It was something that, you know, if I had a radio presenter who was off on holiday, I remember being so gutted, being like, oh God, what am I gonna do for 2 weeks? You know, that morning it was like Kiss FM in the morning, and that was what kind of got me going and starting my day off right. But, you know, yeah. It's just about tying all that in, really. But because, yeah. You know, you can kind of look at it in a bit of an abstract way of like, you know, why is radio this? Why is radio important? But I just think sometimes, especially kind of what's happened with COVID and everything, it's just kind of really drummed in how important these mediums are.
And that purpose element as well, I think it is important, isn't it? Because purpose, it's your focus, isn't it? It's that question of why am I doing this? What is the point? What is my purpose? And if you've got a very defined and clear purpose, like for me, it's running BIY so that I can provide opportunities to people that potentially wouldn't have had those opportunities before, or just helping people who are struggling through their careers, you know, having that purpose sort of clear in your mind, it really helps you sort of filter out the other shit that's going on around you to a
that's
degree.
That's so true. Because also, like, in my job, people kind of, you know, try to get people to come in and shadow the show. And, you know, working on a very busy show, it's hard to sometimes fit people in. You have to sometimes move and everything like that. But one of my biggest things was always making time for people who would email always making time for people who wanted a bit of advice, because I know how hard it is to break through to in this industry. And, you know, I've been in it on and off for like 10 years, if not a bit longer. And I know that it's so hard for people to kind of continue and question why they're even bothering. But for me, I was also trying to figure out how I can kind of do that more next year and have capacity to do so. But yeah, that's kind of the main thing, really.
Great. And then the final P for you, Shola, was people. Talk us through why you picked people.
I mean, I just love people. But I realise that, you know, in terms of friends, colleagues, like the colleagues that I work with at the moment, that we've all stepped up massively together. And I've realised actually that they are my close colleagues and I've lent on them so much this year. And sometimes I felt really stressed. And actually, I've realised that the way I deal with stress is very different. I never realised that the way I dealt with stress more than ever this year, and being able to like lean on people has been kind of such a massive help for me. And I just love the connection that you get when you're feeling a bit stressed out, and like just meeting people for a drink or in a park or something, and just talking it out and realising how much better that makes you feel. I don't want to use the term people person, but I just love being around people. They make me a better person, I think. They make me stronger. And I love talking to like so many different types of people as well, like every day, like when I'm out, just like, because I live just on the market and I'll just walk down and say hi in the morning to everyone, our local Greasy Spoon and stuff like that. And, you know, learning people's stories and like talking to people, it just kind of feeds into this narrative of what makes life amazing. So, you know, saying people is just kind of an ode to the great people that I encounter in my everyday life, really.
I totally relate to what you're saying about how, I mean, I know personally I've lent on people through this difficult year that has been 2020. And all of a sudden, when you're interacting with other people, you might not actually even be talking through your problems with people, but just being with them is, it sort of alleviates some of that pressure, doesn't it?
Let's move on to your career questions then. And I'm really interested in these. You know, you talk about radio being a part of your life and something you leaned on for so long. But when did you first realise that you could work in music or radio and that the music business existed as, you know, a place you could head to in terms of your career?
When I worked for Live magazine, which was like a youth publication in Brixton, and I remember seeing an advert for this magazine. I was like, oh, this sounds interesting. I remember, you know, talking to them, getting in contact and stuff. And then I was kind of the only person who liked kind of rock because I was still kind of building up contributors. So they asked me to do a review of, I think it was like Elbow at Shepherd's Bush Empire or something. God, it was like, I can't remember now, 2003 maybe or something like that. And then I remember writing the review. It was one of the hardest things I'd ever done because I hadn't really written anything. And I was like, God, how do I do this? How do I write a review? Then it went to print and I was like, gosh, this is great. Oh, you know, maybe I could just do reviews. And I was like, oh, well, did you get paid for that though? Because I wasn't getting paid for it, it was all contributing. But then as time went on, I started working with Live magazine more and more, started doing more reviews, started doing more articles, and then ended up becoming editor at 19 of the magazine, which was amazing. And then I was getting paid, like, it wasn't much at all, and I ended up having to work for Lambeth Council, which incredibly was around the corner from Live magazine. So I worked there 2 days a week, and then on the Wednesday afternoon I'd just do a half day at Live magazine. Then I realised, oh, wow, actually, I was making money. It wasn't much at all, but it was money. So that's kind of probably the first time I realised.
That's amazing. I mean, how cool to go in such a short time from kind of being like, oh, I don't know how to write a review, to then becoming the editor of the magazine. That's very impressive. I would love to hear the kind of story of how you went from there to where you are now in terms of the headlines of what you were doing at each role, but also in terms of the skills and attributes that you built up, which have helped you move into the career that you have now.
First of all, I've realised this recently, that I've never actually had like a proper plan. I've come across a lot of people who have these 5-year plans, or this year, like, I want to be here at this stage of my life. And I've just never really done that, actually. Not to be kind of unconventional, it's just how it happened. I just wanted to always be in jobs where I was as close to the music as possible. So that was always kind of my base. So, you know, obviously my first job at Live magazine and stuff, starting from that, I remember the interview process being kind of a bit crazy, and I've never been really good, which I can touch on later actually, about things like applying for jobs and interviews. I've always been actually particularly terrible at that. So I consider myself super lucky that I've managed to kind of work my way up a ladder, really.
Can we touch on that now, actually? Because I think that's quite an interesting point, because so many people will have been through a process where they've applied for a multitude of jobs and they don't get the job, or they find the process really difficult. What did that initial process look like for you? Why was it mad?
I've never considered myself to be a good writer. Even though I've written stuff previously, I've just never had that confidence. I've never had confidence in relaying my thoughts kind of cohesively to people. I felt like I've always struggled with that. I watch, especially like being at Six, I watch how the producers, especially Mark, who also produces Lauren's show, you know, he has this amazing knack of like being able to like relay like really clear, concise information in an eloquent way. And I was like, God, how do I get there? But I think sometimes you can't use it as a hindrance. You kind of just have to do it. And, you know, applying for jobs, for example, when I went from Live Magazine to Sony, because I was through an apprenticeship, it was a slightly different process. The apprenticeship was tied in with Live. So it wasn't like a fresh application, if that makes sense. But whenever I've like applied for jobs, I've just found it like this massive, I was like, I just can't do this. I was like, this is going to be terrible. I've always thought that everything I've written is rubbish. But the only thing that's gotten me through it is just that I just have to do it. I found a really good tip was actually just going online and finding like examples of like job applications. And now obviously, because we have things like YouTube, you can look on YouTube, for example, interview things. And I think those kind of things like really help people. I don't see that mentioned very much over the years when I've had to start applying for stuff properly. I've kind of used those tools as like as a bit of a benchmark, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I guess, look, the point is any application process is relatively daunting, let alone when you're applying for what feels like it's your dream job and your sort of your reason for being. So that makes perfect sense. And I guess going back to the point you just made, you've just got to do it. If you don't apply for the job, you won't get the job. So better off...
When I applied for Metropolis, and you know, there's always this saying actually that when women see a job, if there's like five things that they, that's it, there's five things on the job, if they can't do anything more than two of the things, they won't apply for it. I don't know if you guys have heard that before.
Women are more likely not to apply for a job because they don't feel they match the criteria, whereas men are more likely to assume that it will be fine and they can do
it. If they see a job, they're like, oh, I can do, I'm not making this men versus women, by the way, because I think there's a tendency to kind of go down that route, and I'm pro men, I'm pro women, pro all. But I think going back to that point, it's that thing of they'll see five things and like, oh, if they can do two of it, they'll be like, oh, I'll go for it. But I remember that actually from when I applied for my job at Metropolis, and there was definitely a few things I could not do on that job because I was working in mastering. First of all, I didn't even know what mastering was, so that was quite a big thing, obviously. But I was like, actually, no, I know from working at Sony, I was like, okay, master tapes, yeah, I know what master tapes are. They said like FTP replacement services. Oh yeah, I know how to use YouSendIt, it's easy. So then I was like, okay, and there was like admin, I was like, great, I can do administration. And there was a couple of other points, like having experience in booking, I'd use my experience. I was like, oh, I did club nights, I can book, and just get an email and just blag it, fine. So I took a few of those points, and then in the interview, it was like, it kind of ended up working out quite well.
Tell us how you went from Live to Sony.
I was only 19, but because it's a youth magazine, when you're 21, you're considered too old. I'm using in inverted commas here. So you had to basically look for another job. But Sony had implemented this kind of year apprenticeship for people who were looking to kind of break into the music industry. And it was kind of tied in with Live magazine, so a few people ended up applying for it. I don't really remember too much of the process, but I remember having to talk about my kind of love for music and what music I was listening to at the point, and talking about what kind of skills I'd learned at Live magazine. I don't remember the interview process being particularly like vigorous or anything or intense. It was more, I remember it being more of a kind of chat. I was very, very nervous though. I started just doing a bit of research on who all the big artists were on Sony. No one really told me that, but I feel like when you see the job description, I kind of just figured it out, I guess. So I was basically trying to second guess what they'd ask me, because I thought they were going to be like, right, just name me all of the acts on Sony. But yeah, so I remember it being more of a chat. It wasn't as kind of crazy, but I basically ended up working there for a year. And then I remember kind of being like an assistant to the PA, Jed Doty, who ran it at the time. And Teresa, who I kind of still know now, she was like incredible, one of my kind of heroes, because she was just so badass. It was kind of the first time I realized that, wow, like she had this amazing power influence over people like Jed. And Jed was like running the show, obviously, but he would lean on Teresa in such an incredible way, which I was like, I love that. And I realise, actually, I'm kind of only just realising that, like, right now, guys, I'm having an on-air epiphany. But I always kind of wanted to work in a job where I was quietly powerful. Does that make sense?
Quietly powerful makes perfect sense. I love that, actually. I might start using that. I want to be quietly powerful.
Yeah, so basically, because Teresa was someone who, like, Jed really lent on. And I would just see this just kind of just by where I was sitting. I was sat kind of behind her, so I just kind of took everything in. So in that job, I was sat in a perfect place by artist relations and everything was just buzzy. I was just a sponge. I just took in all the conversations. I just took in how everyone spoke. I just took in how everyone interacted with each other. And I guess that ties in again with my third P about people. But I just love being around people and I just soak it all up.
And that's a really important part of learning, I think. I think particularly within music, and certainly in my experience in labels over the years, a big part of that learning process is about being with those other people, because you learn so much from just absorbing, okay, well, that piece of information is relevant for this particular thing. You understand when priorities change, you understand how teams fit together, how different departments interact. So there's a huge part of learning, I think. It happens around you, and if you're not paying attention, you're going to miss it. One of the things that I always say to entry-level candidates when they start a job is, like, unless your job is actually listening to music, don't sit around with your headphones in, because Never. You're going to miss all that extra additional learning that is happening around you, that if you're listening out for those conversations, it's just going to make the learning process so much richer
and so much better. And by having headphones in, you're actually subconsciously cutting people out.
Yeah,
100%. You're stopping someone from shouting over at you or something, and they feel like, oh, there's a barrier. I have to think twice before alerting that person because they've got the headphones on, they've got to take the headphones out. Are they listening to something really important, or are they going to be annoyed? And it's all these feelings that someone will get in the space of 10 seconds, which can kind of, you know, stop that potential interaction. And
yeah.
And also learning, again, in hindsight, you just learn that at that stage when you're starting out, you just have to take everything in. And it's not about, you know, for me, it was very much speak when spoken to, not in a totalitarian way or anything, but more like they don't want to know your personality just yet. Just wait for a minute and let them get to know you organically. Like, I know that over the years I've said to people, especially, like, you know, people that will come in and do assistant producing and everything, and I've had, like, people come in who just, like, are so desperate to make the presenter aware of what music that they like. God, yeah, I love Can and love all this and all these bands. It's like, they don't give a shit, really, at this stage, because your job is just, at this moment, is just to make a really, really good cup of tea and just do everything you're told to do. And they'll figure out what music and what you're into at some point. There's no rush.
You're right. And I think two things there. You mentioned, you know, by having your headphones in, you are sort of giving off that don't approach me vibe. That's like that. There are so many non-verbal cues that we kind of forget about if we're not being mindful of, you know, our body language, particularly, say, for example, at interview stage. Let's say I always talk to candidates about being mindful of their body language and being engaged. And that means, you know, sitting forward in the chair rather than slouching in what is usually a really comfy armchair if you're interviewing. Yeah, exactly. But it's those non-verbal cues that are really key. And I think you're right as well, what you say about personality. Like, obviously you are fully encouraged to do you, be yourself, show your personality, but you don't have to be the loudest person in the room. Exactly. I think
I've worked with a couple of people where it's become quite difficult, but then, you know, how do you say that to someone without kind of knocking their confidence? Because it's not their fault. They just don't know. They just, you know, they haven't got the experience just as yet. And I'm not saying that that's the same for everything, but anyone starting out has to remember that if they've been given an opportunity for, as like an apprenticeship or job, there's obviously something that someone likes about you that they're taking you on. So just kind of grab onto that and be like, okay, great. I don't need to prove myself immediately.
Yeah. So we went from Live Magazine to Sony, where you were working in the artist relations team. Is that right?
I was doing kind of bits and bobs everywhere, really. So just kind of general assistant kind of role.
Then what was the next step on the ladder and how did you get that?
Well, the next step was being made redundant. After a year at Sony, the apprenticeship ended and then they kind of brought me back in for a few months. Just as like I was kind of for an agency. And then, yeah, sadly, I was working there and loads of people got made redundant, particularly awful 2 days before the Christmas party kind of thing.
Oh no.
It's awful. It was the worst Christmas party. I'll never forget it. And yeah, from the year after that, it was just, you know, I was made redundant. Couldn't get a job for like 4 months. It was horrible. Applied for everything under the sun. There were just no bleeding jobs. It was, I can't remember what year, all my years are muddled up. So I don't think it was.
Was that like mid-2000s? Because yes. I seem to remember that being a really, really difficult...
2005-ish, yeah. Something like that. Yeah. It was like kind of obviously predating the crash and all that. But so you remember it too, because I was just like, I cannot get a job. Like, I just could not get a job. And luckily where I was living with my flatmate, she kind of subbed me for rent for it. And I was just living off nothing. It was a really depressing time and a lot of daytime television and a lot of going down the job centre and... Yeah, I really lost confidence and then I managed to somehow get a job at British Music Experience, which was a kind of exhibition at the O2, and I think they'd pumped a lot of money into it. I mean, it was a job that any, like a 16-year-old kid could do. It was just a job, it was literally just standing on the floor, and the exhibition was great because I learned a lot about music as well, especially like early music, like 50s and 40s, which is really interesting. So that's kind of what I took to it, but... It was an actually day-to-day, it was like a really boring job. I used to have this little book, this little notepad where when I was so bored, I'd just literally just try and name every single band I could ever think of just to pass the time.
But do you know what's really interesting about that is that I think sometimes people forget, particularly if they're having a difficult time, like if they've been made redundant. I guess what's happening in the world at the moment isn't dissimilar in terms of redundancies in the job market. But you can take a job which maybe you feel isn't particularly highly skilled to tide you over, but there will be other things that you can take from that. So for example, for you, and I would say this is probably true of a lot of entry-level jobs in the music industry anyway, you take a job and you're like, okay, because it pays my bills, but what you got from that was this like learning experience. And I know you're someone that loves culture and music subcultures and all that kind of stuff as well, so you probably got a lot of value out of it for yourself personally and your interests. Exactly.
I think I've just gone through life actually not really taking things in. I think I just go about day by day, la 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 la, and then it's only now in the last few years, because I think I'm 35 now, I'm being a bit more reflective and just actually connecting a lot of the dots. You know, British Music Experience is an incredible group of people who I loved, and this guy Amar, he taught me how to, and James, they taught me how to play guitar in the guitar room. I say they taught me, I learned like two chords, but I realized actually, because I never went to university, I was working with all these people who are like kind of my age, and we all just got on so well, and we just would talk about life and everything, and it was brilliant. So that job was weirdly one of the best jobs I've had, even though the pay was rubbish, and it made me very, very good with money. I mean, I was earning like 15 grand a year and living in a flat share, which was like 600 odd quid a month. You know, my takeaway every month was, I remember it was £1,028 a month after tax. And I remember having to get a bus pass instead of a train, but it would take me almost 2 hours to get in every day. And then I'll just eat like tin soup really. And yeah, it was a hard time. I couldn't go out. I couldn't afford to go out. And that really took a toll on my mental health attitude, really, like looking back on it. But it made me like resilient now, because I just never really ever was in jobs where it paid well. But I felt like music was always more important than that, I guess. So then after working at British Music Experience, I went on to work at Metropolis. I saw the job advertised on Music Week and went for the studio job initially and didn't get that job. And actually the woman kind of kept my CV on file. So by the way, if anyone says to you, they'll keep your CV on file, just live in the hope that someone might call you back, because I got a call back about 3-4 months later saying that there was a job in the mastering department. And again, I was like, I don't know what mastering is, but I really love the vibe of Metropolis. I can't really put into words the effect that place had on me in my personal life, in my work life. It really put me on my stead, I think, for the rest of my life. I ended up booking for 4 mastering engineers, some of the biggest marshalling engineers in Europe. So that was a job where very quickly, day to day, I dealt with like record labels and management companies to book in to have your track mastered, where they'll send over WAV files of mixed audio and then the engineer would effectively master it. So I was there for 8 years. And it was great. It was an amazing job. But when I was about 6 years in, I was starting to kind of realise that everything was kind of going back to radio. And I was like, how do I get back into radio? Over this time of working at British Music Experience and Metropolis and everything else, I kind of got like a monthly show at Roundhouse Radio. Again, just looking online and researching to find if I could do a show. And I did that. It was great. Yes, I was doing that radio stuff in the background. I was like, oh God, you know, there's something here. I need to kind of really figure it out and figure out how I can start making this radio dream a reality. And I started applying for jobs and I was rejected over and over and over and over again. All jobs at Rinse FM, countless jobs at the BBC. I've still got all of my rejection letters in my kind of file. Got the BBC career section. I was getting nowhere fast. I was getting really low working at Metropolis because I was like, oh God, as much as I love working, I was like, this can't really be it. I can't just kind of stay here for like forever. I was like, I need to find a way in. And my boyfriend got me a Zoom H1 for Christmas because he was like to me, you know, you've been talking about like recording stuff and everything like that. And then all of a sudden, like podcasts are starting to become a thing. And yeah, I was just like, okay, podcasts are a thing. So at that point, actually, I was really, really deeply into like following loads of influencers on Instagram. So this is like about 4 years ago now or something. And I was like, God, there's something about influencers which I found really interesting because I love the fashion and everything. I was like, why is it that if I saw a person on ASOS wearing this outfit, I wouldn't buy it, but I can see this influencer wearing it and I buy it like immediately. So I was trying to figure out that link. So I just kind of got a list of all my favourite influencers and started contacting some, being like, oh, would you be interested in doing a podcast? And, you know, talking about your life as influencer and everything. And yeah, one of them got back to me, ended up doing kind of a pilot thing, a couple of episodes, didn't really take off, but that kind of put me on the stead to be like, oh, okay. So within about 18 months, I kind of taught myself roughly how to edit. So this was like staying at home, recording myself and editing myself and using Audacity and using a version of Adobe Audition and just figuring out how to edit, like, which was really, really quite difficult. But again, you just kind of had to keep doing it. So I was doing it like every weekend. And then yeah, so basically that was kind of the nuts and bolts of it. So I was doing all of that whilst being at Metropolis. And then all of a sudden I started kind of getting more jobs outside of Metropolis. I started getting booked to do things. I started getting live podcasts. I figured how live podcasting worked. And basically it was just finding a really good hire company and figuring out the text outside of that. I started building up contacts quite slowly and then started producing podcasts and started getting asked to do things. And this was, again, over that 18-month, two-year period. But Six Music was always, that was a station that I wanted to work at. And I was like, I know I said before that I didn't have plans, but I remember about 10 years ago watching Glastonbury on TV. I think it was like Neil Young playing and doing like the TV and radio bit on iPlayer. And I was just like, the next time I'll go to Glastonbury, I want to be able to like work in a radio capacity, like doing shows. Like that was kind of a bit of a thing that ran in the background. So Six Music was always kind of like, how can I break into Six? How can I break into Six? And then, you know, there was an amazing organisation called Sound Women, which is basically, it no longer exists sadly because they ran out of funding, but it was an incredible connection and of women who kind of were always trying to help everyone kind of get their leg up and join them. And then you get paired up with a mentor, and I had an amazing mentor, Hannah Walker-Brown. And yeah, I basically, you know, was on the Sound Women Facebook group one day trying to find this old episode of the Jarvis Cocker episode. This wonderful lady called Amy put me in touch with Jarvis's producer, and he sent me the episode by WeTransfer, and I basically just said, oh, if there's any work experience going, let me know. And he did put me in contact with this woman called Clara. And then again, you know, the ball, it sounds all like it happened really quickly, but this was all a very slow process. But it's just a combination of badgering the right people, finding out who worked on certain shows and everything. And then one big, big tip I'd say is that with Clara, who I ended up meeting, I just said to her, like, we were emailing, but she was taking ages to get back because she was so busy. And I was just like, look, if you've got 10 minutes for a tea one day, I'd love to come in and meet. We got on so, so well. So I'd always recommend, if you can, try and meet people. I know everyone's really busy. Offer to buy someone a cup of tea. That really does help. But we met and got on so well. And a few months later, she kind of just started saying, like, look, maybe over the weekends we can try and give you a free lunch shift here and there. And then there was a weird little opening that she ended up saying that if you wanted to do assistant producing on Liz Kershaw for 3 months every Saturday, but that meant I was working at Metropolis 5 days a week and just working 6 days a week. I didn't realise I kind of burnt out, actually. I burnt out badly. So again, you know, it's about finding that balance, which, again, I'd recommend to anyone, because I kind of went a bit too far, I think. And the dark side of it was just, it all sounds nice now looking back on it, but in reality, it was just really hard a lot of the time because it's relentless. But it obviously paid off. I worked there for 3 months and I just learned the ropes, how to edit, how to do everything. And you have to go into these places knowing your shit. You can't just say you can't edit, it's not good enough anymore. You know, if you want to be a presenter, you need to know how to edit. You need to know how to listen to a track, comply, create clean versions of things. You have to kind of teach yourself. It's such a competitive industry, there's no excuse now. So yeah, doing that, and that kind of led to me obviously getting more freelance shifts. And then, yeah, I quit Metropolis when Hannah Walker-Brown offered me the freelance placement at Amazon Audible, which was kind of to work on a documentary. And I figured that the pay was just going to get for something. It was ridiculous. The pay I was going to get there equated to like 3 months at Metropolis. And I was like, this is an absolute no-brainer. I will go and work in a coffee shop if I don't get any work after this. But it was too good of an opportunity. And then, yeah, I was just freelancing for BBC for about a year. And then the job at Lauren Laverne show came up as assistant producer, which, yeah, I went for. And again, it wasn't because I'd been freelancing on her show quite a lot. Like, Lauren knew who I was, so that helped. And yeah, that's kind of... And then I worked my way up and I've just been promoted temporary to producer since August, hence where everything's been... Ah, but that's kind of where I am now.
That's amazing.
Still there, guys. I talked a lot, didn't I?
sitting back here in awe. That's so amazing. And it's a real, it's a testament to so many things. You've given such good advice there, but I think it's really important. A lot of people will see those big companies like the BBC or the bigger record labels almost like slightly impenetrable, forgetting that if you can show someone that you're interested and enthusiastic, you know, then there will be opportunities for you. It's just about putting that forward. And like you say, having the initiative to teach yourself things like editing, you know, you don't necessarily have to be brilliant at it. It's more just showing that you're interested in learning and have the capacity to kind of take that stuff on. And congratulations on your promotion. And also, I should say, congratulations on the APA award that your team won for Lauren's show. You know, it's an award-winning production team. That's incredible.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
No, well done. So let's move on then to what you actually do day to day now. Obviously, you said you've just got this promotion. You're now a full-on producer. What does your working day consist of?
Well, our job on the show is to make sure that we're kind of catering to as many different listeners as possible. So I kind of see our show in like 30-minute chunks in my head. And every half an hour, we need to be kind of making sure that we're like selling our show to someone who is passing through, might not listen for the whole 3 hours, but has listened to kind of over 30-minute period. So when putting the music together with Lauren each week, it's like, how are we kind of catering? I don't know. Does that make sense?
Totally. It's like you want to make sure you're not picturing it. It's not like a TV show where people sit down to watch the whole thing necessarily. People might tune in and pass through, and you want to make sure you hook them in and satisfy them and potentially keep them listening. Yeah.
Without kind of giving too much away, Lauren and I work each week to get the music together, making sure that we're putting enough women, there's enough decades and enough genres, and there's like not all white half hour or something. So we work on the music together in a kind of really sonic way, and making sure the songs all fit together and everything. And obviously, so let's say we start with Q-Tip and then we play like a playlist track and then a classic track that's kind of like it all flowing together. So that's a big part of my job, is working on the music side of the show. And also it's kind of, you know, booking guests as well, but making sure that they're the right kind of guests for the show. But for example, we tend to shy away from kind of, we like big guests, but they have to be big guests that say something and not guests who are just like media trained within the inch of their lives. It has to be like really important, like they have something to say. So my job is kind of making sure that I'm keeping an eye on new TV shows and new books that are coming out and new films that are coming out, but ones that I feel that are kind of working for our show. So I will work on the music and book the guests and booking the music that we're going to be playing, especially for things like While You're Sleeping, which is a feature that features new music. So it's having like a really close relationship with pluggers, dealing with pluggers. A big part of my job is listening to a lot of music, get sent a lot of music every day. So it's kind of keeping up with that and making sure that the right songs are making it onto our show. that we're also kind of constantly breaking like new acts and artists and giving them a platform. And especially in these times, it's so hard for artists to kind of break through. So that's our contribution to make sure that all like really good artists are having a voice. So a big part of my job is listening to a lot of music that's sent through and having that relationship with like radio pluggers. And also just kind of just day-to-day radio production, like in the studio. Like I set up the studio from a technical point of view. I set up Marianne Hobbs' studio because she's coming down from London. I also make sure that, so when the shows start, I work half of the week in the studio and Mark does the other half at the moment. Normally we're in the studio together. But for example, I'm making sure that the news is on the right channel, everything's running smoothly, the right faders are up before we go to air, I have to take network and all these kind of things before we basically go on air. And like when I'm actually in the studio, it's basically making sure that we're always on time, hitting the news on time. For example, when we do the schedule the night before, we usually know if we've got like maybe 4 or 5 minutes in a half hour that Lauren can talk. But it's me always having one eye kind of ahead of Lauren. So for example, if it's 8 o'clock and a new half hour started, or I'll be like, oh shit, we're like 5 minutes late in this half hour. So I'll be like, Lauren, we need to schedule another song, or you need to do 5 minutes of talking. So it's giving her a heads up. Also going back to when we book guests in, you know, this is the producer, make sure that Lauren's given all the correct notes of transmission date and all those kind of things. So back to the studio, it's like just keeping things ticking along. In the studio, as a producer, it's all about making the presenter feel as comfortable as possible. Like I'm not there to tell anyone what to do. Lauren knows exactly what she's doing because she's a very, very experienced broadcaster. So I'm not there to tell her, you need to do this, you need to do that.
I suppose that's about teamwork, though, isn't it? Yeah. It's something we've spoken about before on the podcast, is about building a team around you that kind of works cohesively together and really adds value. And, exactly. You know, it sounds to me like your role is sort of split into two different areas.
And it is.
One is like the technical operations, but the other side is, you know, the content side of it. And like you said, making sure that the guests that you have, and I suppose the music that you play, there's a purpose for that as well. Bringing it back to one of our P's at the beginning, and, you know, just working really cohesively as a team to make sure that it works well.
And keep it, and also kind of keeping calm, everything calm. Like, you know, I was in the studio yesterday, we were having technical issues with connecting a contributor on air, and one of our systems wasn't working. And I was like, oh God, I literally had like something like 58 seconds or something. And I was like, oh God. So then my first thing is that, right, get another song, just move a song up so Lauren can always just play another track. And then I'll be like, right, we're not going to do it through this system, we're going to do a phoner now. But all of that happening, you've got to remain calm. We've had issues where the next show's system has crashed. And, you know, it's happened seconds before the show is about to happen. Our precaution is to have their show loaded up on my system. I remember that happened when we had a dep in when Lauren was in. But because I had their show up, I just like to the presenter, just start their show and we can control their show basically until they fix their problem. So all of that is happening. You just have to try and remain calm. And I know that I could be someone who kind of panics quite a bit. So that's been a massive learning curve for me. But for me, it's like, when you want to be a producer, especially on the level of BBC, it's like you kind of have to do the extra bits, like learning about systems. You have to make the time to do those things. You have to make the time to fresh up on certain tech stuff like that you might not know, but you kind of have to do it yourself. My manager's not going to tell me to do that because now stepping up in my job, you have to take all these things on. Like, so if there's something that I'm not really sure of, you kind of have to just contact the tech people. Someone could tell you how to fix something, but for me, I want to know like why it's gone wrong in the first place.
That's about accountability and awareness, isn't it? And that's something that I talk about quite a lot. It's like being accountable for what you're doing and being aware of how you're doing it in whatever respect, whether it's an element of your job or how you're interacting with people. I think awareness and accountability are key. Now it's time for my favourite bit of the show. This is the bit we call Kiani's Question Corner.
Thanks for that, Silv. So my first question is, what are your long-term career goals? Like, where do you see yourself in like the next, let's say, 2 years or 3 years?
Well, at the moment, like as I said before, I've never really had like a plan, but I'd really love to kind of make some programmes on Six, I think, like just outside of like Lauren's show in the next few years. I think making a programme from start to finish on like a major network, that's kind of a bit of a plan for me. So at the moment, I'm kind of coming up with ideas and everything, and just to kind of push my production skills as well. But at the moment, I'm really just, I have no plans to kind of like do anything outside of six. I'm just kind of really enjoying like learning the process of how everything works. So, I mean, for me, like that's just, it's quite a small thing, but making a program, my own program on six is kind of a big thing, you know.
That's really good. I mean, always enjoying the process is the most important part, and I always like say that as well. But my second question might be a bit unconventional, but yeah, it's very valuable to me. So which has been more valuable to your career? Like, was it your education or your experience? Because, you know, there's like this whole stigma around, let's say, the music industry / the media industry, where it's like, you don't really need a degree to do so on and so forth. But just like, you know, for someone that's starting out, would you say education has been more valuable or your experience?
Well, for me, because I didn't go to university and I never had that bug to go to university. So for one thing, I'd say for anyone who really feels like they want to go to university, like 100% do it. And I'm not really in the business of discouraging people. However, university is so much more expensive than it used to be. It's like something like 9-10 grand a year now. When I was like 19, it was like 3 grand. Before that, it was free in some cases. So people really need to think very, very long and hard as to whether they think that's right for them. For me, it's been experience, 100%. But actually now in later years, I'm thinking about in some way or form going back into kind of education or like learning. But at the moment, it's been experience, because the experience I've learned from being around people, the experience I've learned from like learning about technical side of how things work and dealing with different types of people and dealing with like different types of jobs, that's all come of experience. And yeah, it's experience 100% for me.
Thanks for that, Shola. That's a really good answer, actually. I'm sure someone would, including myself, pick that up as well.
Because I don't want people to think, yeah, because university, it can be quite a divisive topic, actually, because anyone who has a degree, I'm always in awe of them. Because, you know, even things like writing like long essays and stuff like that, I'm always like, oh, wow, that's amazing. I wish I could do that. But the reality is that the world has changed so much from like 10 years ago. And, you know, for someone to go into university and coming out with probably about 30 to 40 grand worth of debt before even starting their career in a market which is really bloody hard to break into, you just have to really think about it.
Can I jump in on that, actually? Mm. A, brilliant question, Kiani. Thank you very much. B, I would say I tend to agree, well, I don't tend to agree. I agree wholeheartedly with what Shola says. Like, I encourage people to go to university, but think about it properly before you commit yourself to 40 grand's worth of debt. And then if you do decide that you're going to go to university and spend that money, which student loans you may or may not pay back, don't know how that works because I never went to university either. But if you are going to go to university, if you're going to commit time to it, commit time to it. If you're studying, you know, if you're studying, let's say, a music business related topic, go to every lecture, go to every panel discussion, make use of every resource that you're given, because if not, you're missing an opportunity. And we all know I hate a missed opportunity. Massive. But equally, even if you're studying something which isn't related to the music business and you want to work in the music business, for example, you're doing a history degree, let's say, there's still loads of events and communities and things that you can get involved in, whether it's student radio, organising, you know, social events. I know everything's a little bit different at the moment, but it will return to some semblance of normality. Like, you can make an opportunity from wherever you are. And if you do decide to go down that sort of full-on education route, then just make sure that you are aware of the opportunities that are around you. Because once that time is up, and you are out in the real world. Exactly. You're right. It's up. It's done. So don't miss the opportunity, I would say.
That's the thing. You know, that's such a great point. And I think, especially what's happening in the moment, people could probably feel like really downtrodden and think that it's not worth it. But I think if you look back over history, anything that historically has happened where things fall apart and collapse is like things always come back up again. And it's just about remaining creative in whichever capacity. And as I said, university is an incredible achievement for anyone who has a degree in any shape or form. But also, it's not everyone's path. And don't think you should just go to university because you have to. I had to fight a lot with my dad and sister about the decision to not go to university, and I still kind of get it, like even like 10 years on. So try and remain strong.
I appreciate that, both of you. That's like great advice. Mm-hmm. I mean, very valuable as well. So back to you, Anne.
Yeah, it's really interesting hearing you talk about that, because I love how it connects into your whole story. You know, you talk very humbly about how you had to accumulate all of this experience, and then to go from that to then hearing you describe in such technical detail all the millions of plates you have to spin just doing your job day to day. It's really inspiring. So thank you so much for coming on the pod and for sharing your story with us.
Oh, pleasure. I would like to kind of just add on the question about the advice to give to anyone getting into radio production. Mm,
sure.
But because I always say, like, you know, as much as I love an issue, I love Six Music, I always felt that listening to different types of radio and drawing from their experience is so, so important. Because funnily enough, actually, in this last year, like, I'm quite good friends with this guy, Eddie Pillar, who's like a, you'd know himself, mod legend. But he has a show every week. It's on Totally Wired, which where I also have my show. But it's on such a small scale. But the way he kind of commands the audience has been absolutely incredible, especially over this period. And I've been listening to his show like every week. I find that listening to that and comparing it to my show, it's like, oh, it's just a bit mind-blowing. And I think it's so important to be able to listen to all different types of radio, I think. And also another big thing is by doing that, your mind just expands, because I've taken so much from listening to shows on Totally Wired than I would shows at Six or shows on NTS. So it's just all this big melting pot. So even if you have a focus to work on one particular station, like, listen to loads of others, just as a basic kind of starting point, really. And another big thing, which is what I've massively learned over the years, is to kind of manage your own expectations and kind of don't expect everyone to care about your art. And I know that sounds really awful, but I think you have to kind of create art for yourself. And I think when people sometimes put out podcasts and they'll send it out to people, and then I've had people contact me being like, you know, I sent it to my friends and I was really listening to it and everything, and I'm feeling it's only had X amount of views. It's like, you have people championing what you do, but you have to try and focus on your own path and just keep creating your art. And I've had times when doing my Totally Wired show where I'm like, 100 people listen to it a month or something. And I'm like, oh, you know, it's not really, like, sometimes I don't really, like, my friends or whatever, my boyfriend never listens to it. I mean, and I'm like, oh, what's the point of doing it? But I think by doing it, you just kind of get better and better. And even if you haven't got an end goal, it's just, you have to kind of cling on to the feeling you get when you're, like, making it. So, yeah, I just think that that's something to kind of be mindful about. And especially where we live in a world where it's, you know, you're rated on how many likes you get or how many followers you get, and everything's like in big numbers. But actually, it's just really about you just putting your stuff out there. And that's kind of how you, I think you get better and better.
Can I follow up on that point, actually? Yeah. Because I just relate so much to what you just said about when you're doing something, do it for yourself, and you're learning and you're getting better and you're growing. Even doing this podcast, Anne and Kiani will tell you, when we started doing it, I could barely speak. I was like, oh my God, I sound like such a dick. Everyone's going to think I'm such an idiot. But over time, I'm like, well, do you know what? They might think I'm an idiot, but I know what I'm doing. So that's okay. But also, I guess we've touched on a few things, a few themes, and just before we finish, I just want to get your thoughts on this, Shola and Anne as well, actually. We've talked a lot about sort of rejection and going through processes and not always quite getting there. We've talked a lot about knowing your value and knowing you can ask for a pay rise and understanding what your value is. We've spoken about balance a lot. We've spoken about burning out and the reality of that side of things. And I think really one of the themes that we've covered today is confidence and how we grow in confidence. And I suppose I just wanted to use this as a bit of a reminder for everyone. And Shola, you know, I know you said you don't really make plans. And I personally think plans are a bit like rules. They're made to be broken. You know, we change direction as we grow as a person and through our careers. So I just wondered if there was anything you wanted, final thoughts you wanted to share on sort of growing your confidence or anything on that side of things.
Well, for me, like, one of the biggest things I've learned over the years that ties in with confidence is, like, making sure that you learn effectively the rule book, if you must. There are rule books in every kind of walk of life, in every job that you do. But you learn that first, and you can just tear it up, I think, in your own way. And learning the basics for me has just been the kind of most important thing, because I learned the basics and I learned how to do my job properly. It gives me confidence, the confidence I never knew even existed. You know, for example, when I was saying about in the studio, I couldn't connect with that. I already had like 2 more backups, but that comes over time. So always, like, if you can, always try and learn in some capacity. and things like being organized and everything, because all those things kind of can sound quite boring, but being like really organized and being and learning things and figuring out how systems work, it does allow you to be a bit more free later on. I think that's the biggest thing I've learned and the biggest piece of advice I'd give.
I love that. Like, learn the rule book so you can just tear it up and go your own way.
Because our show is like, we thrive on being like shit hot in organisation and precision. But then we also have to allow room for things to kind of go off piece from time to time. And that's what makes it fun.
Suppose if you've got your foundations in place, that allows room for creativity, which is what we're all in it for, really, isn't it?
Exactly.
Amazing.
So each episode, we'll be making a donation to a cause that we and our guests care about on behalf of our guests. Shola, can you tell us about the charity that you've picked and why?
The charity I picked is the Trussell Trust, which is kind of a food bank charity. And they're incredible. I found out about them when watching the Ken Loach film I, Daniel Blake, which completely destroyed me. And I recommend anyone watching, I mean, basically any of Ken Loach's films. But yeah, obviously, people not being able to afford to buy food is something hugely important to me. So I'd like to donate to that charity.
Thank you so much, Shola. And it's been such a pleasure speaking to you and diving into your experience. It's been really inspirational. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Shola. I super, super, super appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, guys. It's been so much fun.
Oh, we've loved having you. Will you come back again?
Oh my God, yes. Try and stop me.
And I guess all that's left to say from us is if you like this podcast, please do like and subscribe and tell your friends. Any feedback is welcome. If you have any burning questions that you'd like to ask us, email them over hello@biypeople.co.uk. That's hello@biypeople.co.uk with BIY Pod in the subject line. You can follow us on social media at biy.people.and.talent on Instagram. If you're just starting out in the music business, check out our Future Talent Facebook page, BIY Future Talent. For anyone who's already on their music business career path, it's BIY Peoples. Again, don't forget to like and review. And thank you so much to our amazing producer, Kiarni Kerr, our amazing editor, Danny Roberts as well. Thank you guys for making this podcast happen.
This podcast was brought to you by BIY People and Talent to help you believe it yourself, build it yourself, and be it yourself.